it's Wednesday morning in the world's wide. What did you mean? Oh, you know, I love it.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. A beautiful network. It's Wednesday, May 11th. We're here in the Classic Factory. I'm J.E. Skeets, and alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Hello, J.E. Skeets. Hello, everybody.
Tassie. We got our Top Shot Hot Boy rocking his Braves hat today. Trey Kirby.
Hey-o.
Hey-o. The International Man of Mystery. Taking it to the TJ Maxx, maybe, with that polo today. It's Lee Ellis.
Friends. Mm. It is a Ralph Lauren polo, I think.
Ooh. Swanky.
Definitely got this at TJ Maxx then.
Nice. And over yonder, pushing down buttons, super producer JD.
Hello.
There he is. And here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you haven't subscribed to No Dunks on YouTube, like the video, hit that little thumbs up, comment away in the stream team, and share the show. Email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. We might hit the beach at some point later this week. Definitely next week, so get those cues in. Check out yesterday's No Breaks episode with our guy, TK, and Graydon Gordian breaking down the Miami GP. What was the best part from this podcast? Sell it.
Couple great parts were talking about all the new helmets that we saw at the Miami Grand Prix.
Yep.
And also, we were talking about Lewis Hamilton thinks that the moon landing was fake, but he also, like, dropped a subtle flex that he was asked to go to space. So I said to Graydon, would you do it? And he said back to me, fake the moon landing? I've been thinking about that since, so I think that was the best part for me.
Okay, well, go check out No Breaks. It's got its own YouTube feed, own podcast feed.
He wouldn't. Graydon wouldn't fake the moon
landing.
No. Too much integrity.
Way too much integrity.
But he also wouldn't go to the moon, so...
What?
He said, I'm earthbound only, baby.
I'm surprised.
Earth is the planet for me.
All right, well, you can get all that and more over at No Breaks.
Earth is the planet.
we're going to get into the games, of course. There were blowouts last night. Then we'll play some true or false. But we got some sad news from the NBA. Hall of Fame center Bob Laniard, he died, the NBA announced last night, following a short illness. He was only 73 years old. 8-time All-Star Lele. He averaged 20-10 in 14 seasons with the Pistons, mostly. For a whole decade there, and then the Bucks at the end. By all accounts, this dude was a badass, and he was the 74 All-Star Game MVP, and he was inducted into the Hall in 1992.
He was a bucket, Bob. I think only James Harden and David Robinson as lefties have more buckets than him in NBA history. Mm-hmm. So, sad day for Bob, his family, and the NBA community.
Yeah, our condolences to Bob Laniard's family and friends out there. Okay, let's get into the games. Let's start with the Heat. Rolling past the 76ers. 120-85 was the score in Game 5. They take the 3-2 series lead. I had someone on Twitter saying the pivotal games turned into trivial games. But they're pivotal nonetheless for the Heat and, of course, the Suns, which we'll get to. But let's start. What do you think about Miami-Philly?
I think Game 5 from now on should be in a neutral venue. So they should have played. Phoenix and Dallas should have played in Miami last night. And Miami and Philadelphia should have played in Phoenix.
Wow.
Interesting.
Why not? Why not? I mean, 30 and a 35-point game here. So, look, it's tough. But I am going to point to what I think is a bit of an issue here. Because first two games of the series, stinkers, no Joel Embiid. Heat win easily.
Right.
Joel Embiid comes back. And it's not like he dominated to the point where it's like, oh my God, this is what they missed.
Right.
He played very, very well, but the Sixers played well. James Harden played really well. Yep. He really energized his team. So you go down there to Miami, you've won two in a row. Miami's offense has been struggling. Kyle Lowry's not there. Hey, this is a chance for us to really steal this series because we can go home. We know we can beat this team at home. Let's go out there from the start, guys. Let's hit them hard. Let's go after it. Now, you also expect Miami, when they're back home, like, we got our crowd. Let's get some threes going early on. We weren't shooting the three ball well in Philadelphia. In Miami, they hit 5 in the first quarter. They get a 12-point lead. 12-point lead in the first quarter in the NBA game. That's nothing. That's basically a tie game. You're basically down 12 points. But it didn't get under double digit. It got under double digit twice after that for one possession each time in the second quarter. To me... where is your counterpunch if you're Philadelphia? Where is the, like, okay, guys, first quarter, that's fine. The crowd, the momentum, the crowd that was there.
It was there.
Yeah.
But I just did not see any urgency, any desperation, any creativity, mm-hmm. any sort of like, guys, what are we doing here?
Now, they were lifeless.
Now you can put this on Doc Rivers. He's going to keep some blame, but you don't need to motivate your players. If you're in the NBA and you're like, hey, we're in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference and we can get out of this series if we win tonight and go home and have a chance and win, that's not on the coach. Doesn't have to say, guys, remember this. I just did not see anybody really have that like, there is no way I'm going down without emptying the clip here tonight. Now, in the end, the 35 points, whatever, but it just never got to a point that I saw where I felt Philadelphia's even making a surge, making a push, making some sort of charge here where they're going to be so determined to not let this lead get away from them. Now, Doc Rivers offensively again, creatively, you expect James Harden to do stuff. He wasn't really doing it. So try something else for a couple of possessions, even if it blows up in your face, because the predictability of it wasn't working, I didn't think. So I'm just more honestly completely disappointed in this sort of a display from Philadelphia, because they tricked me. They tricked me in games 3 and 4 where I was like, they could steal it down there. They really could. If those 3-pointers aren't falling for me. Now, Miami will hit 13 as well. It's not like they hit 25 threes and everyone was lighting up.
Yeah, Strus was on fire at the beginning.
Right, 5 in the first quarter, 8 for the rest of the game. Yeah. So it was really Miami just had to sort of go down there, keep the scoreboard ticking over, and that's all they had to do. So, 35-point blowout is hard to sort of analyze too deeply. I'm putting so much more of this on just Philadelphia's lack of seeming interest in trying to steal this series.
What do you think?
Yeah, super flat. It's surprising that they didn't fight back, I suppose. But I don't know. We saw two games, obviously, in game fives here where the team played really well at home, go on the road, and can't counterpunch whatsoever. They seem like they're comfortable going home for a game six and trying it out where they just were, I suppose. You got to be a mentally tough team to be able to overcome that. And I think that's an issue with the Sixers mentally. Physically, I think Joel Embiid, his thumb is a problem as well. I know we're all talking about the face, but I think there was an incredible replay that the producer called up and said, let's see that rotation on Joel Embiid's jump shot again, because it was a knuckleball from 16 feet. And I think the thumb is a bigger issue than the face. The face is more of a nuisance. As you can see, he's taking it off. He's blowing every time he takes off that mask. He's angry about it, and he got a ball in the face. But I think the thumb is really affecting his shot. I went back and watched the tape. Do Joel Embiid's rotations happen like that if his thumb is injured? Or isn't injured, I should say? No, I think the thumb is bothering him, and that's an issue. But, yeah, is he going to carry this team when they're – yeah, just not altogether struggling on the road where the home team really punches first. I think the thing is with Joel, and I don't think he was doing this to maybe, you know, quiet some of the MVP chatter, maybe help out Nikola Jokic's MVP chances or his, you know, everybody was saying, oh, he's going to come out and destroy people. Maybe he doesn't like all the Twitter chatter, so he had a bad game. So Jokic could look better. Do you think that was the case? I think his thumb is definitely a problem. But, yeah, I think the Sixers' effort level game to game is a bigger one. He was expecting guys to show up, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, what do you think of Barkley saying the reason Embiid's struggling is actually he's distressed over not winning MVP? That's what was going on. Not the thumb, not the thumb, not the face, not fatigue. It was actually just really in his head about not winning MVP. That's what the truckster was saying.
I do think it's in his head, in his face. In particular, I think the injuries are definitely wearing on Embiid. The face injury, even if it's just discomfort and him having to deal with the mask, because you're right, he's taking it off every single break in play. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. The thumb is a problem, especially if you're a little bit of a jump shooter like Embiid was. I guess he had a nice third quarter, 5 for 6, had a little bit of the jumper going.
He was trying.
But I mean, I don't totally disagree with Barkley. I think that the MVP was probably on Joel Embiid's mind. You heard his talk after the game talking about, I don't know what else I can do for the rest of my career. I'll never win MVP. Right. I guess I'll just try and win a championship. Right. I think it's a... I don't think it's the main reason, but I think that all of these things, all combined, led to Philadelphia having, like, probably their worst game of the season in their biggest game of the season. This is just a major dud for Philadelphia. And also, Miami was the complete opposite. Yeah. They played awesome. I thought they got back to moving the ball side to side. I thought their players were moving a lot more. Every time they caught the ball, there was zero hesitation. We're driving into the lane, touching paint, kicking it out for a three or for another guy to start the whole system again and get back inside. They didn't even bring out a different defense. They're like, the fronting didn't work perfectly in Philadelphia, but we're going to stick with it and play it a little bit harder. And Philly had no idea how to get the ball inside to Embiid. They're just throwing the ball 10 feet over his head out of bounds. Mm. So I don't know what it was. It felt like a lot of things were going against Philadelphia, and they didn't have the fight to be able to straighten things out.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Sixers' inability to throw a post pass. They threw two away in the first 6 minutes of the game.
Bad stuff.
And one of them resulted in Embiid getting even more injured. Mm-hmm. He definitely tweaked his back, falling into the crowd and grabbing on it. Like, you already got the thumb, you already got the face, now you got a little back. But they were throwing those passes at the weirdest angles. Like, they were not there. And
bad
just
passes.
Bad, bad passes. And that was just a part of them just out of funk right away. Part of that, the Heat for sure getting locked in to start this game. But Philly, I mean, across the board, yeah. For whatever reason, why Embiid had a bad game, I think it's more probably because of the injuries, less because he didn't win MVP, because he did say in the post-game interview, too, well, I've known for weeks that I wasn't winning this thing.
Yeah, that's when he's tried to win the scoring title.
Yeah.
I'm not winning MVP. I'm going to try and score every point here. But he also said, I'm not mad. That's how you knew he was mad.
Well, yeah, for sure, for sure. But and then Doc, okay, you were saying, like, get a little creative. He did throw out a lineup that we rarely see from him. He went with Harden, Maxi, Milton, and Paul Reed, B-Ball Paul, and Embiid. And he actually got Spo to call a timeout. I think Spolstra was like, what the hell is this lineup? What's he doing out here? But, yeah, again, Doc, he had Harden and Embiid on the bench for the first 3 minutes of the second quarter. A little strange. He's done it at times before, but this is a must-win Game 5. And yeah, Embiid seems to have some fair excuses for why he really had a bad game, mainly because of the injuries again. What's Harden's? What's unfortunately even Maxey's or some of these supporting players? Is it just like they're picking up the vibes from their MVP-like guy in Embiid? Because they were equally as bad, I thought, across the board. Really, who played well?
Yeah, nobody you could say played well. But again, I think with James Harden in that fourth quarter, that was the James Harden. We said that's what Philadelphia traded for. But that guy just didn't show up at all in Miami. And I think that's when Maxey, they get their cues from him. It's like, oh my God, look at Harden. Look what he's doing out there. He is the leader, you know, while obviously with Joel Embiid there. But if the leader isn't leading, then the other guys are kind of like, oh, okay, I guess it's up to us. And you can't really rely on a 21-year-old to go out there and be the guy who does it. So it's that's the thing that's disappointing for me. Like, Embiid, yes, Deadman sort of whacked the ball into his face as well at one point. That looked, oh, man, I felt that one just watching it.
Yeah,
because,
I mean,
his eyes are tearing.
Yeah.
As soon as he takes off that mask. He's not just then.
Squinting.
But,
and yeah.
It's affecting him big time. It's more, you know, nuisance than a function of the way he's playing, but that's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And he's got a pain in the thumb and a pain in the back. And yeah, they're all adding up for sure.
I thought maybe some Twitter trolls would be demanding that the ball is suspended for game 6 in Philadelphia.
Tech foul on the ball. But that's the thing. Like, you're watching this game and you just, I just didn't feel like, okay, here they go. Look at them scrapping for the ball. Look at them diving into the, you know, stand. I mean, Embiid does it, but nobody else did. And that's why it's hard. I mean, Tobias Harris, like, he had 12 points and 3 rebounds. Like, isn't he at some point like, I'm just going to crash my way through here and grab some rebounds, throw some bodies around, show some physicality? Instead, it was like, well, we can't come back. 12 points the first quarter, no chance.
I couldn't help but think of the Brooklyn Nets game on March 10th when all the world knew that the Brooklyn Nets were going to come hard at the Sixers. Everybody knew the Heat were going to come hard at the Sixers here in Game 5, and they got blasted both times.
Right.
And I think that's a sign of leadership. That's a sign of Harden not being able to perform under these lights. Is it them being comfortable that they're going home for game 6? I mean, I don't know, because we saw it in both series last night, the same thing happened. So it's, I don't want to just put it on Harden and just put it on the Sixers, but you got to know when a team just won 2 games that the other team is going to come out strong, especially when, you know, they are the Heat.
Well, Doc was pleading. I think we got the inside tracks audio assist, whatever it's called. He was saying, like, they're doing everything faster than we are. And this was early in the game, and, like, no doubt they were. Everything was just more explosive, led by their guy, and Jimmy Butler. He had an awesome game again. 23-9-6 after, what, the 40-burger he had the game before. I just keep thinking of the Draymond Green quote where he's like, there are 82-game players and then there are 16-game players. Jimmy Butler is absolutely in the latter part of the group. Mainly because he misses a lot of regular season time. Like, you know, he's always out for 20 or 30 games, it feels like. But holy crap, in playoff games, this guy, he does take it to the next level on both ends and tries to, you know, of course, like sort of leads his squad there. He's been incredible throughout this postseason, I would think.
53% from the field in this series, and he switched on to Maxey last night, and that's why Maxey did nothing. Two for 10, and he was just, it gave Jimmy the chance to kind of freelance, get in passing lanes, and then he was right there on the closeouts anytime Maxey would catch the ball, and it's like, Butler's strong enough. You know, Maxey might have the quickness advantage, but Butler's strong enough to get in front of him and then kind of cut off the lane. So I thought that was smart by Spo to use your lockdown defender on their most explosive player at this point. And I also kind of wonder just how much of game four was Harden getting lucky with those shots. He shot 6 of 10 from three. He could have easily gone 2 for 10 in threes on shooting those shots. It was just knocking him down because he was on fire. So that maybe saved this series. For the 76ers, they're going to need it again. It can't be like a Darren Williams sort of thing where he has one good game every 2 weeks.
Yeah. Jimmy Butler for the playoffs, 28 points a game on the 53%, as you mentioned there, 7.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, and 2.2 steals as well. So he definitely does decide, okay, now it's time
to
start.
He goes to another level. He does. Like, you get the flashes from Jimmy in the regular season, but he doesn't, at this point, seem to, like, really care to do it every single night. And hasn't needed to for a lot of the times with this really deep Heat team.
Shutting down Tyrese Maxey was very important, and it brought me back to our conversation that we had on Friday's Beach Steppin'. Maxey, Brunson, or Poole, who you got? Which was a fun conversation because Maxey is able to be the number two or three guy on this team and not have the best defender on him. And I wonder what happens if he can't make these straight beelines to the rim, if you've got an incredible defender against him versus, you know, Jordan Poole, who can dance a little bit more with those long levers, those crossovers that he's got. So that brought me back to that. Also, let's go to Inside Max Strus. That dude was on
fire. Your doppelganger.
Yeah, well, he was
Inside Max.
he was the second leading scorer for the Heat. And you could tell the Butler, you know, motivation, encouragement kind of trickled down to guys like Max, who's not usually an outwardly emotional guy, but he was yelling, he was screaming, and he was ready to fire away. And he took Duncan Robinson's spot because he's been a better Duncan Robinson. He can play defense. You can't pick on him as much as you can pick on Duncan Robinson. And that contract that they signed him to, and he was phenomenal.
He was
in this game,
especially in the first quarter.
He boarded hard. You wouldn't think a guy like Max Strus would be defending and boarding. He had 10 boards in this game to go along with his 19 points. It's leading the team in rebounds, this dude, and Butler had 9. They were ready.
Yep.
They were ready.
Duncan Robinson did get into the game, though. Mm-hmm. About 5 seconds ago in the first quarter, Spo goes to him, though that substitution was mad confusing. Remember that one?
Yes.
It was like, who the hell's in and who's off? Was it Robinson, Oladipo, Hero, wait? And they're like, it took 2 minutes.
Well, the Sixers called the referees out and said, that's an illegal sub. Okay. Just bring in Dunk. Just let him come in. He hasn't played.
That's what people say when I put barbecue sauce on my sub at Subway.
Whoa.
That's an illegal sub.
Legal sub and sub.
Beautiful barbecue sauce.
Yeah. They actually got rid of it at the one by me. Wow. Took barbecue sauce off the board.
Matt.
Come on.
What are you doing? That's a cry for help.
A fine sauce on a BLT sub. What? Yeah.
Insane.
Why?
That's weird.
Where did you think it was normal for me to put it on?
Like a chicken? I don't know. Okay, sure. Like a roasted chicken sub? BLT?
Yeah, man.
A BBQ BLT?
That's right.
That's too many letters.
This guy hates mayonnaise so much, he'll put barbecue sauce on it.
Get out of here,
man. Throw an avocado on there instead of your mayonnaise.
I can't believe they got rid of it. Like,
no,
what is
I can't.
Sauce?
Barbecue sauce, for me, goes on everything. There's nothing that I would say, no, wouldn't do it. I'd throw it on everything.
We know you like it on your eggs.
Absolutely.
On your tasteless eggs. That makes sense. You gotta throw a barbecue. Yeah.
I guess we're not being sponsored by him this week, are we?
But Duncan did play. He got a little bit of a chance there. Sort of, it got some more burn as it turned into a blow. But he played like 5 minute stretch there, really, in the second quarter. He didn't do a whole lot. He missed a three, I remember. But I also don't remember him like getting exposed at all defensively. It's not like Philly was seeking him out or trying to put him into all that action. And when he sort of held his own. Just random notes. Anything else from this one? DJ Khaled.
Yeah, he had a big night.
So ball like finds its way over to him. He was like a kid at a baseball game looking for the foul ball. He wanted that ball.
When he realized the ball was coming, after he picked his face up from his phone, He was deep in the phone, deep in the phone. Oh, the ball's beside me. Oh, I'm getting that. And he stole it from a guy.
Yeah, it was under a seat or something. He gets it. And then, so he's happy. He's got it. And then I guess sort of looked like he was pretended to check in.
Yeah, well, you got to do the Carmelo where you got to pretend. I think he's got that sort of, power in Miami in a blowout this where they're like, yeah, have some fun. Why not?
Well, and then when he fake checks in on his way walking back, he gives Spo the old little back rub like we saw Drake do with Nick Nurse before. Yeah.
Wasn't there outrage when Drake did that? I mean, people were like, you can't touch the coach.
Yeah, there was a little bit.
So there didn't seem that like people were like, oh, that's funny. I think it's funny. I don't think it's crazy, but
Eric Spoelstra was like super happy. He's like, I've chatted him up before, but that was our best interaction. It was very genuine, very cool. Did DJ Khaled really order DoorDash? I saw that going around as well.
What?
And there's a clip of somebody showing up with a bunch of, it looks like takeout bags. But I mean, he was on his phone.
He was on his phone a lot.
Was he placing an order? Getting that BBQ BLT, come bring it on down to the FTX arena.
They did.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Man. Yeah, I think they went back to him. They showed him a couple times, of course, and especially where he sits. You're always seeing him there. But after this whole incident, it was felt like a minute or two later, they showed him again, and DJ Khaled was showing his family his phone. He had to have been showing them, right? Like, look at this, I'm on Bleacher Report, this is going viral. Like, right? He seemed very happy about it.
Yeah, I think they showed him on... he's showing his family that he was on the broadcast.
Exactly.
I imagine, because he put it up. Because, I don't follow DJ Khaled, but I said, all right, I might as well check out what he put up. And that man puts up a lot of things.
Yeah, he's the Snapchat guy, isn't he? Isn't that where he was...
I wasn't going
there.
That's
where he built his social media brand, for sure.
Yeah. I went on IG. He posted like 5 posts in his feed yesterday.
About just sitting courtside?
A lot of them. Yeah. Also his fit.
Okay,
his pink salmon shirt matching his salmon shoes. He posts a lot, like our friend Mo Vernon. I would say that many posts.
That many, when you see it at the top, and it's like little tiny.
No, but in the feed, not the stories.
Oh, in the feed, stories.
Yeah, found in the feed.
Oh, that's too much.
I know, but
pick one or two for the feed, then you eat your heart out when it comes to the story.
I guess that's right. I guess his origin comes from Snapchat.
My only other note. Actually, just back to the game for 1 second, because I did want to point it out. Good 40 minutes from the two Heat bench players in Tyler Hero and Victor Oladipo. I thought Hero especially, he had that, it wasn't close, but Sixers were hanging around, and then he sort of blew the game open. And Oladipo, 5-for-10, 13 points. There's both of those guys positives. Again, it's a bit of a blowout. Some of that's a little bit of garbage time, but they need those contributions to wrap up this series. Be nice if some of those guys travel to Philly and play like that on the road. And then moving forward in a series against the Bucks or the Celtics, or obviously if they get to the finals, you're going to need Hero and Oladipo, especially Hero, I think, having these games where we know he can sort of break out and score. He had 10 last night, but he can score obviously 20 easily.
He's definitely their X factor, especially considering Lowry's injury and how bad he looked when he was actually playing. So anything they get from Hero is much needed from a perimeter standpoint. And I'm impressed with Oladipo, man. Mm-hmm. I was not expecting anything at all from this guy come playoff time. But at the very least, he looks like a reliable sort of different option, a little bit more of a driver than the just chuckers that the Heat usually run out on the perimeter. So he's done a lot better than I was expecting, no doubt.
Any other notes on the Heat's Game 5?
I was happy with this game because I got to watch a little playoff hockey last night. Dipped out in the fourth quarter, turned on Lightning Leafs, saw 2 goals in 5 minutes. This was amazing.
Yeah, the game has changed.
Yeah,
a lot
McDonough,
of goal scoring.
Big slapper. Big slapper.
Who's
dapper.
That?
McDonough.
McDonough.
Yeah, from the Lightning.
Okay.
Yeah, he ripped it. I think it was either 83 or 88 miles an hour. I couldn't really tell.
Oh, it shows you on the...
Yeah. I mean, when you hit it that hard. But the lead was short-lived for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, they were up 2-0, right?
Yeah, Austin Matthews led the league in scoring this year. 60 goals.
60. Hasn't been done in a while.
Got untracked last night. Hooked him up. Nice goal by him. Nice. Nice hockey. Real nice hockey. That was a pivotal game.
So the Leafs won 5-4 in the end? Is that what it was?
4-3.
4-3.
Yeah.
4-3.
They're very bad when they have the lead in series.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I've heard. So expect it to go 7.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
But game it'll seven, be baby. Back in Toronto.
Well, I was wrong. I said to bet against the Maple Leafs last night on yesterday's show. But
it's a new era.
Yeah. What a comeback. Apparently, That place was bumping last night. I think, who was there? Was it Gourmet Spud or Mr. Butter Chicken? Or was it?
I think it was the Spud, not the Spud.
Okay.
Yeah. Spud was there.
Yeah. Good for him. Great crowd.
Always worry that the suits have taken over, but, you know, I guess not.
What'd you think about the Heat crowd? I know you always have
that
thoughts.
That got better.
Got better. Okay. You've called them out. They've stepped up.
Well,
to
Lee was calling them out too on the tweets. Well, you must have got some hate.
I just presented without context screenshot from early in the game.
Oh yeah, come on.
And no comment. Not trying.
Not really. No, because
732 tip.
I also just added Tass. I didn't want the whole general sort of Twitter. I thought just in case, I'd just go at a Tass. Who knows exactly how the algorithm works, but I know that predominantly it's sort of just an interaction between Tass and I and our followers.
Did you retweet it or did you comment back?
We commented back and forth. There were some empty seats, but they filled out.
No, they did.
Commissioner Silver was in one of those seats along with Ahmad Rashad. His main man. That's what he
Yes. I saw during one of the ad breaks on this day in history, and Ahmad Rashad was interviewing Magic Johnson as well. So big day for Ahmad.
Very nice. Yeah. Let's move over to Devin Booker scoring 28 as the Suns crushed the Mavericks. 110-80, 30-point victory here. They got the 3-2 lead. This one goes back to Dallas. Trey, where do you want to start?
Crushed them. This is the barn burner of the night.
Yeah,
only 30 points? Yeah. This was actually kind of surprising to me that it turned into a blowout close through the first half. Looked like we had ourselves a game because the Mavs hit 6 threes. The Suns had only hit 4. Dallas only turned the ball over twice in the first half, and the Donk was cooking 18 in the first half. Mm. We might be looking at an actual pivotal game 5 here, but nope. Huge third quarter for the Suns. They outscored Dallas 33-14. And it was Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton who really led the way. Booker had 12 in the third. He hit 3 threes. Ayton went 4 of 5 from the field, scoring 8 points. They scored Phoenix's first 14 points of the third quarter as part of a 19-4 run that really turned the tide. They scored 17 straight at one point, and it was just meltdown mode for the Mavericks. The defense was so much better for Phoenix. 12 turnovers in the third quarter for Dallas. They only made 6 shots. And that was pretty much the game. Yeah. Fourth quarter was garbage time, except for a super random near fight between Bismack Biyombo and Marquese Chris, because Biyombo caught a lob up 28 with about 9 seconds left. And Marquese Chris said, "Not in the arena that I built." They had to throw down. And shout out to Reggie Miller, instantly calling out Rick Fox versus Doug Christie from 25 years ago.
A preseason
fight. And it's a wild fight. Worth looking up for sure. But Booker was awesome. 28 points. He really took over there in the third quarter. Ayton was solid again. 20-9. He had 3 offensive rebounds. And the Suns bench, I thought, was really good as well. Cam Johnson had 14. And then Monty Williams dusted off Biyombo instead of playing JaVale McGee. Biyombo, good minutes. I think he was like 7.7 boards or something like that. Yep. And Landry Shamet was really good as well, kind of being a tertiary ball handler, if you will, after the primary and secondary. Shout out to Math. Nice stuff for Phoenix. Home court advantage. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Monty Williams, instead of going with Campaign, he gave those really minutes to Shamet, who had 8 points, 4 assists in 19 minutes. But Campaign had played brutal in Dallas and he was relegated to the bench, really, out of the rotation, at least in Game 5. I think I jinxed this game because we had talked about it. What's the strategy for watching these late-night games? A lot of us, myself included, with most of them, watch the first half of that late game, and, you know, then the eyes get heavy. I'll really lock in the morning when I watch the second half. But I, last night, because Luka, mainly because of Luka, he was hitting some crazy shots in the first half, telling the crowd. He kept doing this to the crowd. Ooh, you relax. And I'm like, this is it. This is going to be the Luka 45-point game here. Because what did he have in the first? I think it's 17 or something like that. You know, he was just hitting some crazy shots. And it was a close game, like Trey just broke down. And I was like, nope, I'm staying up. This is a pivotal game 5. This could be a special Luka game. I got to be live for this one. And then the third quarter happened, and the Suns just cranked up the defense, and the Mavs were helping them out with just like interesting shot selection. Tried to go for some home run shots, Luka included, and it was over in a hurry.
It's one of those rare scenarios where you say, "Okay, we're gonna let their star go off and take out everybody else," but the star also has a bad night. He started off well, and he ended with 28, but if you're going to take away everybody else, which they did a really good job of, and they were, you know, showing those doubles and coming back to those guys so really nicely, I think that threw Luke off. I think that was a nice touch by Monty Williams, but more so the guys were just executing a little bit better in that second half, and then everybody else, yeah, was terrible, so much so that they turned it over 12 times in that third quarter.
That's a lot. Yeah. That's a hell of a lot of turnovers for one quarter.
Yeah, and the assists were non-existent. You know, 9 assists in the entire game is a number that doesn't happen very often. I think it was only the second time this whole entire season where a team was single digits, and that was because the Suns were so good at showing, getting back, and they were just really, really on point. A very different start to this game than the Heat game, where, yeah, the home team didn't get out to a good start. They were down 15-9, but the Mavs just, yeah, kind of whittled it away a little bit. A couple shot clock violations in that first quarter, so I don't know if that was just a bad recipe where they got off to a bad start and then the Suns woke the hell up, but the third quarter was really where it turned. I mean, it was a three-point game at half and then disgusting third quarter. I'm sorry you had to stay up because that was just such a bad mix where both parts. If everybody else is going to have a bad game, Luka should go off, and yeah, he's had a great first half, but the second half, yikes.
They made a great call, Trey, you said it. Like, because we talked about it after game four. It's like they're doing this weird thing, like, where they're coming to help on Luka, but they're not committing all the way. And then so then Luka's just kicking it out to these guys, mainly in the corners. And then they can't get back in enough time. And they're like, screw that. Like, we're fine if Chris Paul just sort of playing Luka one-on-one. We'll live with that. Just take away all these corner threes. Take away all these shooters, DFS and Bullock. Wait, am I saying it correctly?
I know. But Spiro said that in the first round, the Bullock.
Bullock, yeah. Yes.
And now Kevin Harlan's saying as well.
Yeah. Kevin Harlan was pissed that I've been saying it wrong for 8 years.
Yeah.
Bullock is how he was saying, but Bullock. Anyway, take away these guys. And that's that. I think is the move against this Mavericks team who need all these guys hitting these threes. And they really committed to it, I thought. Because there was a lot of time Luka was just on Chris Paul. He scored at times. Mm. He got the best of him, but I think they're happy with the math on that. They're like, make him work. Chris Paul's not a bad defender. He's a strong guy. He can obviously go into the odd offensive foul. That's fine. We'll live with our guys playing him one-on-one for the most part, just as long as we stay at home on the shooters. And Ayton was big in this game, too.
He was great.
Yeah.
He was great. And the little tinker of having Bismack Biyombo as the backup center, he's just been extremely solid instead of JaVale McGee. But I think you got to Bullock this defense in. This is the way you got to play it because Reggie Bullock was 0-for. Dorian Finney-Smith didn't have a great game. The shooters were taken away. I think they just did a better job of getting back to those guys.
Yeah, I mean, because then it's only on this Mavs team. It's Luka, of course, and then it's Brunson to some extent.
Who had a decent game.
Who had a decent game, but no one else can create.
No.
At all. I mean, you're laughing if you're like, they're putting it on the ground. You're like, okay, go nuts. So it's the right move, and I love the coaching changes there from Monty Williams. And Booker, you said in the third quarter, I thought he was also great in the first quarter, which he always is, it feels like, but matching sort of Luka in shot making. So
yeah, great. And the Suns outscored the Mavs 44-24 in the paint, and I thought that the key was here, it doesn't have to just be Ayton. Everyone should just attack the paint because they don't have that rim protection there, and really step, you know, put your foot on their throat where it's like, just keep on scoring. In that third quarter, a lot of that, I think they only had 3 threes in that quarter. Everything else was just inside, pounding Dallas where they don't really
helped out with all the turnovers and scoring in transition.
Yeah, and you're just getting out and just like executing like that. But the other guys, I mean, between Finney Smith, Bullock, however we're saying his name, and who else was I thinking there? Brunson.
Well, Dinwiddie.
Brunson, yeah.
Yeah,
I remember Spencer Dinwiddie. Yeah.
But Finney, Bullock, and Brunson only got up 9 threes.
Yeah, between them. Yeah,
you know, Bullock got up 12 in game 4. it's crazy. Or was that Finney Smith? Who knows? Yeah, Bullock.
I think we've been saying it right the whole time. We never said Bullock. We said Bullock, which is how it's written on Basketball Reference, which is how he came into the NBA saying it. But they're going harder on the lock now.
Yeah.
I think it's just Bullock.
Well, Basketball Reference.
Fast.
I'm not sure I can agree that I've said it that way. I definitely said Bullock. I mean, I know I have. And so I guess Harlan has too. Yeah.
I thought Spiro was getting it wrong, but maybe Spiro was right.
Yeah, it sounded strange hearing it.
Yeah.
For us basketball nerds, just for a guy to be so far into his career and to have the name switch, it just feels weird. Nemanja Bjelica is another one. I thought it was Nemanja forever.
Yeah. Well, it's one thing, it's the first name, which you don't have to really say. It's another thing, it's the last name on the jersey.
Yeah.
I mean, why don't we just call him Reggie? That's a great name. Because I guess we had another famous
taken.
Reggie.
Anyway, you lack in the talent, and then you lack in the effort. That's a bad combination because they got beat everywhere. offensive boards, you have the second chance points, the fast break points, everything.
Yeah.
So the effort was also a problem.
What, do you like the Mavs' chances, though, to still get this to seven? And if so, what changes could we see Kidd do in game six?
Well, I honestly, it's just getting these guys firing away. I think that's what it is. I mean, they got up 32. I think they only had 39 in game four there, but they just hit so many more of them. And that then makes that defense scramble a little bit because, like, you got to get out to these guys. But it just wasn't happening there. He hasn't got many options. I mean, he's going to start Powell again, I guess, because he's done that the
whole
time. Well,
he may not.
Maybe. I mean, maybe he goes with Maxey. Maybe he goes with Maxey. He doesn't have tons. I mean,
no.
They win when those role players are hitting those threes, and so they need them to do that in game six,
yes,
which it will be now. But, yeah, I mean, sure, they can certainly drag it out to seven, but they obviously have to be much better, much more locked in Phoenix if they're going to win this.
Yeah, and it's sort of funny with this game. We thought one of the storylines would be, well, Chris Paul, there's no way he has three bad games in a row after those two brutal games in Dallas. He played fine.
He played fine
in game five, but he was not the story by any means.
Right? No, but I think that the fact that he didn't get foul trouble allowed him to play hard on defense.
Yeah.
Because I thought that changed the way game four was played. But there is a good chance we get a seven-game series because even though it was a 30-point blowout, we had two of them yesterday. Yep. I'm going to give you a stat here.
Okay.
A team has never lost a series when they win game five by 30-plus points in a series that's tied 2-2.
Wow.
So you think a series that's tied 2-2, you don't have a lot of 30-point blowouts. And you sure. don't. You don't throughout right. history. There's now only been – can you guess how many there's been now? There's an additional two.
Five.
Yeah, now there's 12. There's okay. the team that won that game five by 30 plus points before the season is 10-0 in the series.
So LeBron did that to the Raptors, didn't he? I think.
How dare you?
Oh, in that one, yeah, that's probably one where they kept on going home.
Yeah,
home
I think
in
it
that
was
conference final, the only conference yeah, final that they played.
It was like 2-2, and there was some buzz that maybe the Raptors had got it, and that was the LeBron. I never worried that we were in trouble. Right, in
smash.
Yes. I think Sixers-Raptors as well, right? Like a game five, Sixers got blown out 2019. Came back and won game six and then game seven. Bounce.
Well, it's quite possible because we've had 10 of those series and four of them have gone to a game seven despite that big blowout. So we could have a couple game sevens.
Which one do you think is more likely to go seven of these two from last night, the two blowouts?
The Mavs series.
You do?
Yeah.
You think
I think the way Sixers, they played in the Dallas. Sixers one, the Sixers, I think there's a little emotional and a physical.
Yeah.
Yeah. A bit of a deficit there.
Okay.
I think home court helps with these guys, as we said, with Dorian Finney-Smith, the guys who are firing away. I think that really helps, mm-hmm. being on that home floor. We should see them firing from tip on Thursday.
Thursday night? Yep. Every second night with most of these series now. Okay, any other thoughts on the Mavericks getting crushed here by the Suns? Great, great performance from the number one seeds last night. Really looking like those number one seeds. Okay,
so what are you going to do tonight?
What do you mean?
Are you standing up for the second half of the second game?
We'll see. We'll play, see what I'm getting from that first half. Probably unlikely because I'm not loving the chances of the Grizzlies without Ja Morant.
Right.
To maybe even stay alive. But, hey, you never know. Maybe Desmond Bane's coming through in the first half.
You never know.
Save it
for B block.
That's slightly, exactly right.
Save it for B block. Yeah. Slightly earlier game, too. Slightly earlier game.
Oh, I like
if you
that.
Want to talk minutes. 9:30.
Well, that Sixers Heat game was over in like
12 minutes.
Well, it was. But it was starting to wrap up at like 9:45. And it's tipped, like I said, at like after 7:30. That's
that
was
is
a quick game. Yeah. Playoff game for sure. Wasn't a whole lot of video reviews.
Nah. I was like James Harden. I was in the shower early last night.
Well, I've got some more, extracurricular, fun from that Heat game a little bit later in Tweet of the Night.
Nice.
Yeah. It actually involved, you somehow get involved in it.
All right.
I don't know. You're sure you know.
But, I'd love to be involved.
All right. Let's take our first break. When we come back, true or false? It's been so long. Don't go anywhere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, yeah, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap, offering outdoor outfits, or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/nodunks.
All right, back in the Classic Factory. You ever take a second to think how many sports podcasts there are?
Not enough.
Not enough? You think there should be more?
Get a few more out there.
Why not? Well, it's really crazy when you think, like, when we started a sports podcast, there was like four, maybe five.
One for each major sport.
Yeah, really. But now there's thousands, if not millions, of sports podcasts.
There's a lot of team podcasts, and I don't want to correct you, but there was way more than four. Was that a joke?
Yeah, it was an exaggeration.
I don't know.
I live on Twitter. I don't know what's a joke or what's real. I can't tell.
You can't make jokes anymore.
Yeah.
Heard that on a sports podcast, actually. Speaking of sports, you see a guy hit a lefty home run in his first ever lefty at bat last night, Tassie? Wow. Anthony Rendon. It was a no-hitter for the Los Angeles Angels. They brought in the other team brought in a position player late in the game, like in the eighth inning. So Rendon decided to bat left-handed, cranked a homer.
Wow.
Amazing.
I don't know why there are a million sports podcasts when we do all the sports right here on this one podcast.
If you get two basketball games that have a 65-point margin of victory, you're getting some other sports in your basketball.
Hey, you want to talk a little bit about the NBL?
Ah, shout out to the Sydney Kings.
Hey, Kingsers.
They beat the Jack Jumpers.
Oh, yeah, they did. Jacked them.
Yeah. In the final.
In the final. It's all over. Yeah. It's over. Yeah, I believe Sydney Kings head coach is R.C. Buford, his son, Chase.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, R.C.'s out there.
There you go. See? You got any other sports?
You got another sport?
I think we ran out of the sports.
We already talked about the horse race.
I mean, I
talk about the horses?
We didn't talk about the horses. Well, we got a polo shirt.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, that was race of the century or something, wasn't it?
That was something like that.
That overhead camera angle. God, that was
amazing.
Cool.
I thought we did talk about this. Oh, maybe I did on the weekend shift. Yeah, that's what happened. I slipped it. Don't worry, guys. I talked horse racing on the weekend shift. Shout out to Rich Strike. Oh, yeah, I said, because I was pissed. My favorite number, 21. If we were at the track, if we were at the Derby, I would have been putting a little bit of money on my favorite number. 80-1 long shot, but come on.
He wasn't even part of the race, though, until the day before.
Oh.
I'm not going up to Rich Strike.
Come on, I would.
You were going Happy Jack.
I would.
Yeah, I could tell.
The Happy Jack Jumpers? We take all the sports and we turn it into one.
How the hell was that horse prepared? If he was just told the day before, hey, you're going in this race, horse.
Gamer.
Yeah, exactly.
When the lights are brightest, Rich Strike is fastest.
It turns out the horse doesn't have much say in the matter. You know?
He's like, oh, I'm running on this track? I thought I was going to run on another track? still running.
Yeah. Horses really want to be horse. There. They're just, they just get a guy on the back or a woman on the back of them, and off they go. Congrats to Rich Strike. Okay, let's play True or False. Yeah. How did this get made? Same music. It really blows my mind every time I hear this music. It's been a while since we've had True or False. Okay, first one. John Morant. He's got a bone bruise in his right knee. He's considered doubtful for the remainder of the playoffs, let alone tonight's game. So Memphis will be without its star point guard for the second straight game as the Grizzlies try to avoid elimination against the Warriors in Game 5 tonight. So Trey, get us started. True or false? I'm going to word it like this. The Grizzlies don't stand a chance without John Morant tonight.
False.
Okay.
They stand a chance. I just don't think it's going to happen. They stand a chance, however. The Grizzlies have been competitive in every game of this series, except for Game 3, which was a blowout, because their style is just kind of tough for the Warriors with the physicality that Memphis brings. They were able to get away with playing Steven Adams a little bit in Game 4, so the size is there. And then the Warriors have notoriously been a sloppy team turnover-wise, and the Grizzlies can capitalize on that kind of thing. So they've done a really good job of keeping things grimy and just keeping it close. However, the only game that the Grizz have won so far in this series, Ja Morant had 47 points and scored the last 15 of the game. It's been fourth quarter execution that has really been the difference in this series, which is kind of no surprise considering the Grizzlies. This is, you know, their second playoff appearance, but their first real run here in the postseason. And obviously the Warriors have a lot of championship pedigree in their background. So between Dylan Brooks and Jaren Jackson Jr. being really streaky and Bane being hobbled and not having the kind of series that we saw or the kind of performance that we've seen throughout the season from this guy, it's really tough for the Grizzlies to find reliable offense in the fourth quarter. So I'm expecting a close one, but I'm also expecting the Warriors to pull it out.
So you think the Grizzlies could pull it off as long as it's not close, maybe, heading into the fourth quarter?
Yes, they missed
John Morant scoring
big time,
especially in Game 4 where they missed a lot of shots in the final couple of minutes. And he's been, I think, one of the best clutch time scoring guys in the postseason. I think he maybe is the best with 42 points, according to ESPN stats and info. So same question, true or false? They just have no chance of winning this without Ja Morant.
Same answer, false. They have a chance, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think the Grindhouse is one of the greatest home court advantages in the playoffs. Those fans get into it from the start.
True.
The Grizzlies know the season, it could be over tonight. So I think they are going to fight and scrap for everything. I think get the ball in Tyus Jones' hands a little bit more. I think he's a bit more of a steadier point guard. Dylan Brooks, if you can just keep the shot selection to something a little bit more reasonable, because I do like the intensity that he brings in on the defensive end. Sure. He is a scrapper. He's a fighter. But you've just got to channel that in the right way and not let it be distracting or hurtful to your team, like when he gets ejected 3 minutes into a game. So they've got some things. I think Jaren Jackson and, you know, these younger guys, Bane, they know, like, leave it all out on the floor. I don't think there's going to be any effort issue out there from the Grizzlies.
Right, you don't think they'll roll over and die?
No, not at all. I think it's going to come down to the execution. And then knowing that, like, hey, if we can keep it close, maybe we're a chance to pull it off.
What do you think, Tass?
I don't want to say this, but I think it's a blowout tonight. I just don't think the Warriors start the way they started in Game 4 there. They missed 16 straight threes to start the game.
Yep.
And that's hard to do. And if some of those things fall, you know, if a Clay or a Curry, they just were off, then I think this is a blowout. Because I think we're not talking enough about the Warriors' defense in this game. I know the Grizzlies are the scrappier bunch, but the Warriors have brought it in this series. They've out-rebounded the team that should be out-rebounding them all four games, and the defense is going to be there. And it's just going to be up to this this Grizzlies team to find enough creative shot-making, and I think the Warriors have done such a good job of stepping up to reduce those shot attempts at the end, or like to limit how open they are, because, you know, we talked about Draymond Green doing a good job against Jaren Jackson Jr. I think Andrew Wiggins at the end of that game was phenomenal. Not only did he have that block on Bane where he was so locked in to also keep it in bounds. He's done that a couple times this series. That dude is locked in. But also, you had... who was I going with? I don't know. I lost my train of thought. But anyway, he did it on Tyus Jones too. That floater that we talked about, Wiggins bothered that floater.
Oh, yeah.
So he's locked in. And if Wiggins is that locked in, where, you know, he is steady Andrew, 17, 17, 17, and 16 in this series, I think that just shows that this team is clicking on another level. And I think they'll be clicking a little bit more. You know, unlike what happened at the beginning. Again, 16 straight threes, it's only happened like a couple times in the last decade in the playoffs. So I think they'll be ready, unfortunately, for the Grizzlies. It's been a great season.
It's actually Wiggins. We've been pronouncing it wrong the whole time. Of course they have a chance, because especially because they're at home. I don't like your advice for Dylan Brooks. Fire away, Dylan. Fucking let it rip.
Yeah, we want this series over.
No, we want one good Dylan Brooks game. Let it go, man.
I imagine he has 45 tonight. 8 for 11.
45. Okay, easy. I think he'll be happy with 25 at this point. On some efficient shooting. Mm. Oh, shots. Well, yeah, he can get 45. All right. I do not like the Grizzlies. I would be picking the Warriors in this game, unfortunately, with no John Morant. Because it'll probably be close, and yeah. They've struggled down the stretch. I'm interested to see if Steven Adams gets more minutes. Mm. I mean, he obviously started the game. He was pretty successful, at least in helping within the rebound department mainly, and obviously gives them a big body there and setting picks, maybe creating a little more space for some of these guys like Jones and stuff like that. But yeah, we'll see what he does. See if how many minutes he can give him, or how much Taylor Jenkins even wants to. And does he? And if Brooks is doing what he did in Game 4, does he move off of him and go with Melton or go with Williams or somebody else? We'll see if they can extend the series tonight. All right, let's talk about the other one tonight. It's pivotal.
Oh, it's pivotal.
Game 5, Bucks-Celtics. True or false? Whoever wins Game 5 tonight wins the series. I'm going to throw that on you, Tass.
I think that's false. Like we talked about with those other 2-2 series, whoever wins Game 5 is not necessarily going to win Game 6. It can go 7, no matter what, but I do think Boston wins tonight. I'm just taking a stab in the dark, thinking that Tatum kind of found himself at the end of that game, and that's the important part. Al Horford got him there, there's no doubt, but Jason Tatum was in his head. He wasn't finding his shots. He was overpassing. He just was not himself. So at the end of the game, when... again, Al got them there, and they shot 16 of 19 in that fourth quarter. That's a stat that still blows my mind. To have a 40-plus point quarter against the Milwaukee Bucks on their floor, I think they feel so confident, and they should feel like they've got the best scorers in this series. I know Giannis, you know, quote-unquote, is the best single scorer, but Al Horford ain't going anywhere. He is so locked in. He's playing so well this entire postseason. Now they've got Tatum looking like himself, and if he looks like himself, they should think that they've got, you know, a couple of the best scoring options in this game. And oh yeah, Jaylen Brown's still on that team and has had a good game in this series. So I think that Bucks are running out of offensive options. Giannis was gassed at the end of that game. I think the Celtics are clicking, and it could carry over here to Game 5. I think the Bucks want it to be ugly, but the Celtics, again, to be able to just miss 3 shots against a championship defense, they're feeling good. If Tatum carries it over, I think they win this game.
Is this the pivotal game, though, we've been looking for? You know, last night's pivotals, they were duds.
Not pivotal.
This one, God, fingers crossed it delivers, right? And do you think it's true that whoever wins could... is more likely to win the series than not?
I guess it's an 83% chance. How many times have we seen that stat recently? Yeah.
It's 80, high.
Yeah, it's high. But this one seems like it could be a 17%er. I'm with Tass. I don't think it's a guarantee that whoever wins Game 5 is going to lock it in here. Basically, what this series has come down to is Giannis has had 2 incredible performances. He was the best player on the court. Game 1, he had the triple-double. Didn't shoot well from the field, but he dominated. And then Game 3, he was incredible. Those were Bucks wins. I think Giannis can certainly have 2 incredible games in the last 2 here. I would be more inclined to think that Giannis has 2 great games than Al Horford has 2 Giannis games. So Al Horford has been awesome. He's been... maybe the MVP of the Celtics in this series with his defense on Giannis and the way he's actually been able to produce offensively as well. But 60 points between him and Tatum in the last game, and it was still a pretty close game. So as long as Drew Holiday is able to have a decent game, 5 for 22 cannot happen again. If the Bucks can hit some threes, they're back in this. But this still feels like a 7-gamer. And Game 7, who knows what happens.
Yeah. What's the over-under for Al Horford points scored tonight? Where do you even set it?
17 and a half.
Yeah.
Take the over.
Yeah, I was going to say around 16 or 17. Obviously, 22 in Game 3, 30 in Game 4. He's shooting lights out. He's hit 9 threes over the last 2 games. So you're setting the line at 17.5.
Yeah.
You're taking the over.
I'm taking the over. Yeah.
No reason to see why Al Horford doesn't continue to knock down open threes, which we talked about. I mean, that's a bit of the Bucks' strategy, which sort of has to be almost when you're playing, you know, Tatum and Brown. Somebody's going to be left open, so it's been big out. And then what he's done defensively in the work on the boards, you love it.
It's been incredible.
Yeah.
Been incredible. He's always been a solid vet, and it's good to see him now still at this point of his career delivering. You know, he was thrown to Oklahoma City and told to go home, and now he's like, I've still got something in the tank. and he's showing it. So yeah. He's defending Giannis as well as anybody can as well, physically, and he's doing a great job there. So this is a fascinating series. I have no idea how it's going to end. Who wins tonight doesn't mean they're going to win the series either. So okay. I would love to see a Giannis-LeBron-type performance. Remember, what was that, Game 6, 2012, where he just like took over? I'd love to see something like that from Giannis tonight. But
if that's to happen, I think somebody, like Horford did for Tatum, really, in Game 4, somebody has to sort of, on the Bucks, be it one or two guys, they got to carry Giannis for the first part of the game. It can't be Giannis got to do everything from minute one, in my opinion, to sort of win this game or maybe go on to win the series. He needs to have a little left in the tank come the third and fourth, mainly the fourth quarter, to then continue to play Giannis sort of bully ball and Euro step around everybody and just dominate the game. But somebody, be it Drew, be it Pat Connaughton, always plays well there in Massachusetts, somebody's got to help them get to that point in a close game, and they could. Drew needs to have a good game. He can't have a Dylan Brooks 5-for-22 game. But excited, and I will go on the record and say whoever does win tonight's game goes on to win the series. Cause math, yeah, man. Final one. The only reason half the people are tuning in to today's show, okay, during a recent appearance on the big podcast with Shaq, the Big Diesel sounded off on Gobert. Rudy Gobert, he said the three-time Defensive Player of the Year had no chance of shutting him down. Now, he was set up by Spice Adams. But
that's why they call him Spice.
Yeah. Shaq said, give me a break. You know, he's not shutting me down. The Jazz center, Rudy, he responded to O'Neal's assertion in the comment section, I would lock his ass up, Gobert said on Instagram. These two have had a little back and forth type of beef for a couple of years now. But the question is, Lee, you can get us started. Mm. I'm excited to hear your breakdown. True or false, Prime Shaq would destroy, it's a key word here, destroy Rudy Gobert one-on-one.
I love seeing that question in the doc this morning because the games, the research was over pretty early. So it gave me some time to go on a YouTube rabbit hole of Shaq. And my personal opinion of Shaq, I've got him top 10 of all time because for 4 or 5 years there from like 98 to 2003, most dominant player in the game, without question. Now, we only got one MVP to show for it, but should have won a couple more. He got the three championships. And looking back at those championships, the finals, the first one against the Indiana Pacers, this is the bigs that they had, the Pacers. Dale Davis, who was like 6'11 with traps like bigger than his head. Rick Smits, who was like 7'10". Derek McKee, who was like a small 6'9". Sam Perkins, another small 6'9". And Zanta Buck was on the... he got some burn in that series as well.
He had fouls to give.
Exactly.
That could have been his second title.
That's 30 fouls they had basically to throw at Shaq. And just seeing him just like flick these guys out like they're flies bothering him at a barbecued lunch there was incredible.
Barbecue sauce.
Then against the Sixers the next year, it was Mutombo, you know, multiple time defensive player of the year, sort of draped all over him, and Shaq just like smashing over him, just spinning and twisting. Matt Geiger got some burn as well.
Yeah.
The following year, you remember who the New Jersey Nets big man was?
Todd.
Big Todd.
Pinball Wizard, baby.
Pinball and Todd. Pinball Wizard.
So obviously Todd, you know, he had his work cut out for him there. But even earlier, like 2001, before they got to the finals against the Sixers there, they went up against Tim Duncan and David Roms, got swept. I mean, Shaq was just a bully and a menace. And I think he has actually lost a little bit of his place in the NBA
hierarchy.
Yeah. I have him at like I say, top 10, somewhere in that mix there, because he was just a bully and a beast. And Rudy, I would compare, of those guys I mentioned, a mix of sort of a Mutombo and a Rick Smith, sort of like a big, long, lanky guy. But ultimately, Shaq would have feasted on him as well. There's no way Rudy's doing anything more than fouling out in those sort of games, because Shaq was just incredibly athletic for a massive, massive dude. He was quick on those spins baseline. If there was a missed shot, the amount of time Shaq sort of just like King Kong Bundy when he used to wrestle those the little guys, just push him out of the way, grab the ball and smash it down on them like that. So, Shaq, he was an incredible human basketball player, an athlete. And Rudy, respect Rudy for his Defensive Player of the Year awards, but he ain't touching Shaq. He ain't getting near prime Shaq.
Where do you have Shaq on your list of incredible humans?
incredible human athletes, yeah. Honestly, he is one of the highest because...
Yeah, because Prime Shaq, yes.
Because, you know, playing basketball, as we all did as kids here, sometimes it was a guy 6'2" on the other team, and it was like, all right, expose him because they were uncoordinated, they couldn't dribble, and it was like, even though he's tall, he can't do much else. So when you see a 7-footer, 330 pounds he was in Shaq, he's spinning and twisting and jumping like that. Incredible athlete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so you got Prime Shaq destroying Rudy.
I mean, Prime Shaq destroying virtually
anybody.
You know, we never obviously really saw Bill Russell. I guess he's one of the better guys, and you know, but that's it. I can't really think of any player in NBA history who would have been like that guy's life. Even Hakeem Olajuwon, who won the championship against Shaq. It's not like Hakeem shut Shaq down.
Right,
Shaq was still very, very good in that series, but the Rockets were better than the Magic.
One of the quotes Shaq had in this sort of back and forth or whatever you want to call it, he said, quote, "It's against my religion for someone to hold me one-on-one." That's a great line. I take that personally. It's against my religion for someone to hold me one-on-one. I love that. Trey, but thoughts?
Come on, son.
All right.
Not even close here. Rudy Gobert doesn't lock down the centers in the NBA right now. Joel Embiid against Rudy Gobert in his career, 23 points, 12 rebounds, 44% from the field. He met Nikola Jokic in the playoffs. Jokic went for 26, 8, and 5, shot 51% in that series. Karl-Anthony Towns, lower on the totem pole, 22 points per game, 11 rebounds, 52% from the field. Also, Rudy Gobert would have to try and score on Shaq.
Yeah, that's a problem.
He maybe would get one basket. Maybe two. What's he going to do from the free throw line? They check the ball up top. Rudy Gobert could not dribble it to the hoop with a guy guarding him. So I think this is 11-2. Okay. But I love that Rudy Gobert said it, and I would love to see this happen.
Yeah, yeah. I think even Shaq, in a follow-up, he was like, you know, he's got to say that.
He's got to say it.
I mean, I would... It was almost like I'm putting words in Shaq's mouth, but I'm paraphrasing, like, it would be worse if he doesn't say that he can take me. In Shaq's mind, you know?
Yeah.
That's what he sort of has to think. But, yeah, the hypothetical one-on-one... Who are you leaning with?
It's Shaq. I would have loved to see Prime Shaq against Prime Hakeem. They didn't necessarily cross over, even though they met in the 95 finals.
It was a young Shaq.
Yeah, it was too early. Yeah. It wasn't peak Shaq. Yeah, peak Shaq, unfortunately, didn't live as long as we wanted it to. You know, we wanted a 7 or 8 year run rather than that short run. I mean, but hey, it's Shaq.
That's why, in my opinion, he has sort of slipped on some people's all-time rankings list, because it's no secret that he didn't care a lot of the time, especially regular seasons. Like, you know,
well,
you looked at Shaq and you look at his numbers and even his accolades, and you're like, he could have had more.
Yeah,
he was doing a lot of other things, and when he needed to, he kicked ass. But I think people hold that, rightfully or wrongfully, against him.
Well, that's right. You go, well, he only won one MVP, so how good was he? But he should have won. Did I do him in my thing? I can't remember. But he should have had at least 4 or 5.
Oh, geez.
And, he definitely should have. From 99 to 2003, he should have won them all.
Most dominant.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. I mean, I remember like a Paul Pierce saying, like, at All-Star Weekend, it was one of those questions, like, who's the one player you could play with? And he's like, well, it's Shaq. I mean, who's picking anyone else apart from Shaq right now? And the championships, I mean, he won three there in the prime Lakers years, but they definitely left one or two on the table because of he and Kobe not being able to gel there. So but still, yeah, he was the number one pick. I think he averaged 27 and 15 in his rookie season there. Lived up to hype quite well. And those playoff years, not including the New Jersey one, he was like 30 and 15 on like 58% from the field, I think it was. Where is it? I've got it here.
Just in the 0-1 finals, he was 33 and 16 on 58% shooting against Dikembe Mutombo, which is honestly a pretty solid comparison for Gobert.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Yeah, he beats everybody. But there's an easy answer to this. There's a one-on-one league out there. Tracy McGrady has started a one-on-one league. There's an article about it on The Athletic that I've got a clicked save stories from Mike Vorkunov writing about Tracy McGrady saying that his sons don't watch basketball games, so he started a one-on-one league.
Oh, boy.
Well, Rudy versus Shaq.
Wow, what a way to start the league.
That's a pretty good way. Do it.
Okay. Well, let's hear from everybody in the stream team, everybody watching later, everybody listening later, thoughts on... Prime Shaq, really, versus current Rudy Gobert. How's it go down?
What do you got? We got a pull up right now.
All right.
What you got? Shaq versus Rudy, one-on-one.
I don't think this is going to be kind to Rudy.
If it's not 100%, then...
It's not.
No,
that's good for Rudy.
Yeah.
13% are going Gobert here.
Okay.
Wow.
Didn't know we had that many Jazz fans.
Could be some joke votes being thrown around.
I think these are joke votes.
You never know. Can't tell what a joke is.
What's a joke?
All right. Let's take our final break. When we come back, I teased it earlier, back to Miami for Tweet of the Night. Don't go anywhere. All right, let's start wrapping up today's show with a little tweet of the night.
Tweet of the night. Wow.
Twitter.
Okay, tweet of the night, actually tweets of the night. I'm going to tell you a little story here with this segment. Something that I missed, at least, in the first couple of games in Miami. I'm not sure about you guys, but we did bring it up on the show. But in game one, we had a fan in Miami at Bamonte Adebayo. He tweeted a pic that went pretty viral of him there in the lower right portion of your screen, if you're joining us on YouTube, with the caption, and he's standing in front of the Sixers bench, got great seats, or he's down on the floor at least. I can confirm Doc was cooking up nothing in this timeout. You know, a pretty simple tweet, but it took Twitter by storm. It had like 70,000 likes. It's just a funny little tweet. So they go on to win that game. Well, you know, Bamonte is back for game two, and he was there again. He did it again. Went down, got his pick. You know, it worked the first time. He's still cooking up nothing. LOL. There's Doc talking to the team. You see Harden. A couple people even looking at him as he's taking that selfie. So then that goes to Philly. They lose two games. Well, back in game five, I saw him in the crowd last night. Now, I didn't know who he was at first, and that's why I started doing the deep dive on Bamonte. So he got a prop for game five. Got the apron. He is still cooking up nothing, and he had it on there. Now, I was interested, so I'm really doing like a search of this guy's Twitter account to find out, did he get a selfie in game five? It's been working, and they won. Well, he tweeted, "Nah, man, I was about to take that third selfie," and the security goes, hey, you're not going to do that selfie thing again. If you're going to go by here, just go straight through. So he unfortunately didn't get the selfie with Doc cooking up nothing. He said too in another tweet, like the Sixers, like their eyes were all on him, according to Bamonte. That, you know, this was not happening again. But we end this little story time here with Tass, and this is where you come in.
Oh.
He tweeted this photo to you, who had a breakdown of I don't know the woman's name, but we call her a Heat dress woman.
I think her name is Rodmila.
Okay, Rodmila, who you see sitting courtside now. She had the jerseys dress, I guess, with a Heat red jersey dress in the first game, and then it was the white jersey dress in the second game, and then last night. So he found her and replied to you with this photo.
Oh, I didn't see it.
So just the world's coming together here of a couple, I guess, notable Heat fans at this point. And I think Miami's really got to try and get this guy to Philadelphia for game six to wrap up the series. I think he'd be willing
on the road
to go in Philly. Wow. He's built for this, I think. He's like, he can take the heat.
I think he needs to combine his powers with box out kids so he can box out security and get the photo. He needs a lackey to
help him. I thought maybe games one and two that his seats were right there, but again, my little deep dive suggests that he's sitting somewhere else and then goes down to the floor. He obviously has great seats. He's lower bowl, but goes down, then takes the selfie, and there, you know, security wasn't having it in game five. So anyway, shout out to at Bamonte Adebayo. And the Heat, I saw having some fun with it too, because they had a photo from one of the other games. It was a photo with the Heat bench and Spolster talking to the guys, and it said Spo cooking up
something. That's right. Yeah, anyway, I saw that. Yeah.
It was pretty good. I missed it in games one or two. I don't know. Did you guys see this going around?
Yeah. Because I thought originally that looks like a Photoshop of that first one of his face.
That's what it does.
Yeah, because it popped so much. And I was like, I don't know if that's real or not, but
Look Photoshop.
Yeah, it looks like he's on Twitch or something.
Yeah.
It's a great caption. I can confirm Doc was cooking up nothing at this time. It's so simple.
See, I would have preferred going straight selfie, no apron. He blew his chance at the third selfie when he wore
the apron. Too obvious. Probably a good point.
And I think the triptych of those selfies would have been much more impactful to me personally. I wish he would have just stuck to the plan.
But, you know, he's thinking, I got 15 minutes of fame. Maybe I'm selling some aprons here.
That's the problem. It wasn't about the trolling.
It was about that apron.
It was about the apron.
Which I don't know if you can buy, but...
I bet you'll be able to.
I'll get one if you can. And we had the nice tie in there with the dress woman, who kept it just like simple. She didn't...
More simple.
There was just a dress. No jerseys involved in that dress.
Listen, I say simple. It was an elaborate dress, I'd call it.
Gorgeous.
Very nice. Rodmila Lolly, I believe her name is. She seems like she's a bit of a celebrity there. I mean, she is front row, so people seem to know her. And Mr. Bamonte, as he's called.
Yeah, cooking up nothing.
Some great seats. He could have also had somebody taking a photo of him going by.
I think part of it, though, is, isn't it? Like he wants to do the selfie. Like yeah. That's the thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What do you mean? I don't understand what you mean. Well, there was I actually saw footage of him walking down. Somebody saw him. Like, here he goes. He's going to go try and get the selfie.
Oh, that. Yeah, well, security said, you know, you can't pull out your phone. Don't bring a selfie. But what if he walks by, turns really quickly, smiles to the camera that's taking a photo of him? Then, you know, it's not an ideal ratio for a selfie. But, you know, we could zoom in.
But you got to – now he has to have somebody – sitting in one of those great seats behind the bench, is that what you're saying? That they could take the photo for him?
Well, he's got to know somebody.
Trust them with their phone.
He's got to know somebody.
Unlock the passcode and all that. No, I don't know.
Maybe he could call the serial sign center.
Yeah.
I've seen that guy for a minute.
No.
Yeah, Michael.
Anyway. That's right.
Tonight's games, guys. Bucks, Celtics, Warriors, Grizzlies. We've already teed these up in the last segment there, playing a little true or false. But Lee, give me one bold prediction from these two game fives tonight.
Home team.
Oh, wow. Okay. You love... That's always your bold prediction.
Home
is always road or home team victories.
So. I mean, I'm definitely pulling for the Grizzlies tonight. I want them to extend their season. Nice. It's been fantastic. Tragic news, of course, that Jar's likely out no matter how long they're in the playoffs here, but it'd be great to see him live to fight another day.
Okay. Bold prediction before we go. What do you got from either game?
Bamonte is going to be there.
Wow, who's he cheering for? Who's cooking up nothing?
Who's cooking up?
The Grizz, for sure.
So Taylor Jenkins is cooking up nothing? Or is Steve Kerr cooking up nothing? Is Steve Kerr even back?
Oh, Mike Brown cooking up nothing.
Yeah, I think Mike Brown is coaching again tonight.
Mike Brown cooking up nothing. Take a selfie. You'll get on the show tomorrow. Just be careful with security. Trey, give me a prediction.
Home team, road team.
Don't tell us who.
It's a home team, road team. Yeah, I'm sticking with home team, road team. I think that's how it's going down. Celtics, Warriors would be my choices tonight. Now that Tass said it's going to be a blowout in Warriors, Grizzlies, I'm really hoping not.
Yeah,
I'm really hoping not.
Too.
But you could definitely see it going that way with the Warriors being like, we ain't messing around. Let's put this one in. To bed, get some rest here, and maybe we can get Gary Payton back in eventually.
Well, I'll keep running back this prediction. It's got to happen at some point. Dylan Brooks, big game tonight from Canadian boy Dylan Brooks, keeping the Grizzlies alive. He's going to have a special, special game. It's going to take a lot of shots to get there, but more than half will go in tonight. Keep that bar low. All right? You don't think so, eh?
No.
You want to bet? You want to bet on it?
So he has to go under 50%.
Yeah, okay.
What's the bet?
$10.
$10.
All right.
Let's do
it. Well. It. Dylan Brooks. There you go. That's how we'll end the show. Email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok @NoDunksInc. Get yourself an athletic subscription. Go to theathletic.com/NoDunks. Check out No Breaks if you haven't already. Get ready for No Bus tomorrow. I heard you're filling in for TK tomorrow. So it's like late breaking news to me.
It's also news to me.
Oh, jeez. Well, you're in.
I hadn't mentioned it to him yet, but yeah, you're in tomorrow.
What am I, a horse?
You're the horse.
Rich Strike over here.
Yeah. You better bring it. Like, what was his name? Rich Strike?
Rich Strike, yeah.
Rich Strike.
Mm. Yeah.
Hey, I'm a thoroughbred.
There's an 80-1 odds that Tass won't be here for No Buffs tomorrow. Place your bets. Anyway, No Buffs coming tomorrow. It'll be JD and I, or Tass will also be joining us. So keep an eye out for that.
It's a good time to get in.
Great time. There's only 3 episodes left.
That's crazy.
That's wild.
That's crazy to me.
I hope it never ends. So there's 7.
Do you think Jeff Probst is like a Scott Foster shows. Trying to get it to go 7?
No, he knows.
Yeah. Probst is like a Foster, Scott Foster.
Oh.
He's trying to like get the season to go long.
Scott Foster. Yeah, what'd you say? I thought you said Sir Foster. I was like, what?
Sir Foster went viral too.
What?
On Bleacher Report, I think, or House of Highlights, one of them. There's a clip of him. You know how he films himself while he's doing the keyboard? Yeah. The thing is, like, when you forget you're working or something, it may have been during the game 3 where the Hawks were actually playing well and coming back. And he's like, the clip is like, he's like cheering like crazy and he's like high fiving people. Then he's like, he realizes like he's got to be like on the organ. That's pretty funny. Shout out to Sir Foster. Shout out to Scott Foster, not as much. Shout out to Jeff Probst, absolutely. Clipper Bros!
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, Heat fan Bamonte Adebayo is not related to Bam Adebayo. You don't know what jokes are these days, so I had to clarify.
And Trey is watching the Sir Foster clip.
It's good, actually. It looks pretty good. Funny. I'm just imagining the tunes he's playing. Oh, it says plays defense. 100,000 views, though, for the Sir.
Hey, man. That's fine.
Get back on it. Yeah. Whoa!
We'll see you guys tomorrow. Embrace the day, people.